Welcome to Rangers Rundown, the podcast in which we're learning that we should have been slightly more ambitious this winter when we wished for only a very good Delino DeShields, Nomar Mazzara, and Joey Gallo season. Maybe we should have asked for the moon. I am Max, and I'm joined today by Hayden.
Hello.
And Mike.
Hey, guys.
And we are here to appreciate the ever-loving heck out of Delino DeShields, Nomar Mazzara, and Joey Gallo, the only three members of the 2018 Texas Rangers who are even worth mentioning outside of the obvious. Our savior, Adrian Beltre, back from the disabled list to grace us with his presence. You guys as excited as I am to see Adrian back on the diamond?
Yeah, I just hope that he doesn't hurt himself, to be honest. That's my predominant thought. I almost can't even enjoy him. It's hard. I have to look past the fact that his legs might explode on any run to first base or to any base or really at any time at all. But I am very glad to see him. He is very good at baseball, and baseball is very easy to him. And comes back, doesn't need a rehab assignment, obviously. Gets a couple hits, a couple RBIs, plays third base. And he was only out for 2 weeks, which I know it was a grade one strain that he had, but he's still ahead of schedule. And I just hope that, I care about him. And obviously this team is not going to the World Series. And I would just really hate for him to just try to come back and fight for this iteration of a Rangers team, injure himself, and then not be available to be traded to a contender and get one last shot at a ring.
The thing I loved about seeing him come back was the fact that he just picks up where he left off. I mean, he doesn't need any time to get a swing back. He's getting hits both games, RBIs both games. Changes the whole dynamic of the lineup just with him in it. It makes it a lot more challenging for the opposing pitcher. And it gives me hope that when Elvis comes back that we're going to start to see a semi-normal lineup. I think that this can be a good hitting team as it's currently constructed. Obviously, it's not a finished product, but when Beltre was in before, Mazzara and DeShields and Joey, I think we're still, to a certain extent, finding their way, and now they seem to be hitting their strides. And so I like how this thing looks going forward.
The injury fear is definitely something I agree with, Hayden. It does take sort of the edge off of just appreciating Beltre every time you see him running around, where, you know, it's just in the back of your head a little bit, like, is he pulling it? No, he's fine. He's just, his hands are doing Beltre hand things. And I don't like that very much. I like being able to just purely enjoy Adrian Beltre on the diamond, but definitely reassuring to see him back out there. Really does make me agree with Mike and regret that we do not have Elvis on the diamond right now and that we're still solidly a month. I think June 11 is his eligibility day.
Just watching him play these last 2 days, I told a friend of mine, I said, I've got to get out to the park more often. I mean, yeah. No matter what happens going forward, if he plays out the string with this team, if he gets traded or whatever, we've got a very limited amount of time left to see him play, and I want to get out there and see him with my own two eyes.
Got to take those opportunities to see all-time players when you have them. So I got this in a different sense with Ichiro. He came through and played in Atlanta last year, and I managed to go out there and get the chance to see him. I never actually had the opportunity to see Ichiro live before, and even old and crusty Ichiro was absolutely worth seeing live, and watching him do that stance he does where he holds his bat up and tucks the jersey over. You can see it from all across the stadium. You know exactly who that is and what he's doing. It's really fun. And definitely think you should see these players while you have the chance. Everybody out there, they're just good. They're fun. There are some reasons to watch the Texas Rangers in 2018, even though they're one of the worst teams in the game. You know, we're about a quarter of the way through the season now. I think we're bang on a quarter. We're really close to it. And,
we're 39 games, right?
10 games below 500.
Yeah, you're right.
Or I guess 9 games, excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not good.
9 games back, and currently have the seventh worst record in baseball right now, which is not something that you like, obviously, but it's not even like interestingly bad.
Yeah,
we've talked about that, and it's, there are two teams right now, just to give some perspective. The White Sox and the Orioles have single-digit wins right now, and
ooh boy,
they deserve it. That's not a small sample size kind of you ran through a buzzsaw kind of problem, especially for the White Sox, because the American League Central is trash. I mean, the Indians, I think, are 500 and in first place. The Tigers, who we just played, and they are not very good, even if you didn't know their record. Just watching them was embarrassing. They're in second place, I think, only by like four games. It's there's some bad baseball out there, and the Rangers are kind of, I mean, we were definitely part of that, but it's probably going to end up being like the 10th worst team in baseball, so we don't even get a good draft pick out of it, but the Rangers are going to Rangers.
That's the Rangers way.
Yeah.
I'm going to Rangers real hard. I think I said it in like the first episode of the podcast that we're going to, you know, mediocre our way into like some 12th to 18th overall pick, and we're going to take some outfielder from Georgia, and it'll be fun. So, you know, woo, love to be right. Feels real good. Oh no.
it's one thing to think about that going into the season and say, oh, I think this will be a 73 win team. Maybe we could reach up to 77 or something like that. But to watch 162 games of a 70 something win team is kind of drains on you, but
And it's dreary the way we're doing it too, where we're, sure, you know, we're dropping a bunch of games early season, and that's partially because we did not have our center fielder, second baseman, shortstop, or third baseman for a significant chunk of the beginning of the year. So yeah, we're going to lose those games, but even when you start getting them back on the roster, it's how much are we going to improve? You know, maybe this team is actually around a 500 team when it's got all of its right pieces in there, when you stick Willie Calhoun in the lineup, and maybe when you shuffle Martin Perez and Matt Moore out of the way through DL stints or cutting. But then we're staring at a season that was just thoroughly underwhelming and uninteresting. So,
what's crazy to me is the fact that right now they're still on a 100-loss pace. And they're still being out-team tanked by other teams.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
We're not even going to get a good draft pick out of this. We have a month. Yeah. There's a month before the 2018 draft. I think it's June 4th is the first day. And that should be interesting. We will try and have some draft coverage on this podcast. And it won't just be us. Stay tuned, dear listener. We have some news coming up for you at the end of this podcast. And there may be some draft coverage worth tuning in for going forward. So open them ears. There's going to be some announcements today. We're feeling ourselves a little bit here. But before we get to the draft, we do still have to talk about the actual 2018 Texas Rangers, which, as we've mentioned a few times in this podcast, does include a few people we genuinely, absolutely enjoy watching. And one of those actually good, Nomar Mazara. What a week. What a season.
What a season is right. And what a week is even better. I'm going to call this, it's the month of Maz. So if you just do some tricky manipulation of the last letter of the month of May, it is now the month of Maz. And I really hope that he very plays tricky. Well. Yeah, I hope that he plays letter. Well through the whole month. That way this can actually be a cool thing that I came up with, rather than just being like, oh, he had a good first week and then he was terrible and that creative idea is kind of useless. He's hit 7 home runs, I think, in like 8 games, something crazy like that. But overall, really good season, like you've mentioned. Mazara is somebody that Rangers fans obviously are well aware of and have seen him play every day for the last two seasons. But what's held him back, I think, in the national level, outside of Bill James, is the untapped potential. And we've talked about also how he's just turned 23. Don't write the book on him yet. I mean, he's still got a lot of growth to do in terms of gamesmanship and also literal physical growth. But also we talked about how the wins and losses are probably not going to stack up in our favor in terms of the final score. So what are the wins that we are looking for? Maybe the games within the game. Talked about Joey Gallo improving his approach and using all fields and things like that. But Mazzara coming into this season, one thing that we really, really needed to see from him is hitting left-handed pitching, because it'd be kind of bad if he could had to be on a platoon, and then also hitting the ball in the air. I mean, because we've touched on this. When he hits the ball and he hits it over the fence, it can go 450 feet. It's just that he's only hit 20 home runs each season, and so you say you have that power, but last year you and Elvis hit the same amount of home runs. What's going on there?
Hey, don't you impugn Elvis Andrews' power hitter?
Yeah. He's transformed himself, and I love that. And once he gets back on the field, you can bet that I'm going to really put him on a pedestal. But Mazzara has shined in those two areas this year so far, left-handed pitching and with the power. We already touched on the home runs. But versus lefties so far this year, he's got already six extra base hits, including three home runs. Last year, he had eight the whole season and only one home run. He's outslugging him his line last year versus left-handed pitchers by over 200 points. He's holding his own. The lefty righty splits don't really exist for him this year, and I'm over the moon about that.
I saw something on Twitter today. Someone made this comment, and it's not meant to compare Mazzara to Judge, but it said that it stated Mazzara's age, and he just got to his 50th home run, which we talked about Joey getting to his 50th earlier in the season, and then it talked about the fact that at that age, Aaron Judge hadn't even made it to the majors yet. So it's just a testament to what he's starting to put together at such a young age that makes this really fascinating and gives you a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah, Hayden, you really kind of nailed what I was talking about in the precast. What I think fans generally were talking about is that there were three things that you looked at Nomar and said that these need to get better. You know, the overall slash line needs to look more robust to be considered a great player. We really need to see any semblance of life against lefties, and we need to see power, not just, you know, over the fence, but his isolated slugging was poor. He wasn't really hitting for home runs or for doubles. We just needed to see those things. And I think the secret to the third one is what you're saying. It's elevating. It's getting the ball in the air. He had a tendency, and still does every once in a while, to hit the ball into the ground too much. And sitting here on the 10th of May and looking at it and saying, wow, you did all three and you've done them in spades. I don't even know what to feel about it. Like, when it feels like we haven't really had a lot of stuff break the right way. We've had things go as sort of reasonably expected. You know, you look at Adrian Beltre being good, and it's like, is it shocking that Adrian Beltre, a Hall of Fame player, is a useful guy at age 39? No. But was it impressive and just good to see Nomar Mazzara turn into the player that we've been kind of talking about Nomar Mazzara being for the last 6 years? I don't really know how to react to it. I keep waiting for the shoe to drop or for it to turn out that, aha, we are actually taking away all of his hits against lefties. They don't count anymore. He was cheating. I don't know what to do with my hands.
I think I may take issue with your comment on Beltre.
Okay.
I mean, did you see the tail end of Michael Young's career?
I did. But yeah. Michael Young, even good Michael Young, and I really liked Michael Young. He was a top end player for me at my age. Oh, I'm trying. I know Mike's gonna come through this the computer here and attack me. I definitely loved Michael Young, and I tried to explain it to my wife, who is a recent baseball convert, why Michael Young means so much to me and to Rangers fans. You can pull up the stat line and you go, well, yeah, he's pretty good, and it doesn't really communicate it. It's that we didn't really have anybody. We had those 90s guys. We had the Pudges and the Juan Gons and the Raffies, and they were incredible. And then they all left. And we had a couple of years of Alex Rodriguez, but no one really got how good he was at the time. And then they were just doldrums and then through that, Michael Young. He was the good player. He was the guy who hit 300. He was the only player that you cared about in the lineup, and he was incredible. And for what I appreciate about Michael Young, for how much I treasured Michael Young being a good player, that dude's got nothing on Adrian Beltre.
No, and I get that. And it wasn't meant to throw Michael Young under the bus. I mean, I could have rattled off several names there. Michael guys Young who just... Take me. They lose it overnight, and it's just night and day, and it's sad to watch. You know, it happens right in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
But Beltre, at 39, it's like, where is he drinking from the fountain of youth? Because we need some of this stuff. It's amazing that he's still able to make those plays, to make those throws, driving those runs, do everything that he does at that age. It's fascinating to me.
Him and Bartolo, just hanging out. Doing whatever it is they do, being good
in time.
Yeah, it's. I do think we need to step back every once in a while and say, "Oh, the Rangers suck," and then just remember the fact that we get to watch Adrian Beltre every day, and that's well when he's on the field, and that is really special. There is something really, really cool about watching an unequivocal Hall of Famer going out there, even when the team around it isn't very good. You know, Angels fans could look at their team and say, "Well, we're not making the playoffs," but it is very cool to have Mike Trout. And that's fun.
And Pujols getting his milestone. He got his 3,000th hit.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Angels are good now, and Pujols is hitting 3,000. I think the last couple of years, Angels fans would probably be pretty glad to trade in Albert Pujols for just about anybody who isn't making $30 million a year to be that guy.
But those milestones are kind of fun to watch. I live really close to the ballpark. I'm a mile and a half away. And so last year, the weekend that Adrian got his 3,000th hit, I was actually at Friday, Saturday's, and Sunday's game. I was like, I've got to see this milestone. I don't know what possessed me, but I just said, I want to be there when it happens. And it was a really cool moment. Just, you saw it on TV, everything that happened, his kids, his wife, and all the fanfare. It was just, it was a fun thing to be a part of. And you never forget those things.
I was actually overseas during the last part of the chase. I was in Belgium for a sort of a work trip, and we were staying up very, very late, early into the morning, because I absolutely refused to miss seeing it happen live. And when it did actually happen, I believe it was a day game, and so it wasn't that bad for us. It was just sort of regular nighttime over there. But the night before, I think we were up until 3 or 4 in the morning. I'm just on my bed in our flat watching on my phone, hoping that I could catch this and that it was all going to be worth it. And I wouldn't trade that in. It's an indelible moment as a Rangers fan. And I've got so many that were made when I was a child that I can't replace. And that's what I'm not going to forget is tuning into everything, making sure I was there to watch 3K, because it's special. It's special when anybody gets there. And it was really special to see your own player do it, and to have it be a player that you just appreciate so much. You know, Beltre is such a great guy to root for. He's such a fun guy to watch. All the happy feet, all the dancing, all the pulling batting circles out from underneath himself. All of it is just really fun, and to see that happen was really kind of fun. And I think it was a truly incredible moment. And so it's good to keep seeing that. It's good to have him back on the field and playing baseball again in 2018, even in a season that seems kind of lost. It's good. I think we should remember that for all the Matt Moores and Martins Perez and what have you, we also have Adrian Beltre, and that's really cool. A lot of teams don't have an Adrian Beltre.
Mm-hmm. And never have.
Yeah.
Or never have. You know, there's also Imagine. People who've spent 30 years, 40 years, 50 years watching their team and haven't seen a guy like Adrian Beltre. That's sad. I've made myself sad.
It's really sad. Oh, man. Yeah, him leaving is going to be tough, no matter how it happens.
At least we're probably losing him on a high note. You know, I think he's going to be getting out of here. He's not going to be dragging himself out onto the field every day, broken and terrible, rocking a 60 WRC+. This is the guy who's going to end the season being probably pretty effective, maybe too hurt to really keep playing effectively anymore, but still hitting when he's out there. Or a guy who is going to get traded to a contender, somebody's going to make that push and see if he can't win himself a ring. And it's going to be rough, But it's going to be a really, really free and easy way to pick a team to root for in the playoffs that isn't Texas, and I'm on board with that. You know, I've got a couple of teams that I'd like to see him on. I think there's probably some teams that wouldn't, I mean, maybe they're not saying it right now, but they definitely would love to see Adrian Manning third base for them going into the playoffs and sitting with their young guys and saying, hey, you know, this isn't that big a deal. I've done this 1,000 times. This is how you do it. So,
how about this for a gut punch? 2017, Yu Darvish goes away. Mm-hmm. 2018, potentially, Adrian Beltre goes away. 2019, last game at the Temple. I think that one may hit me harder than any of them. I told someone I think I may cry when I'm at my last game next year because I've probably seen 400 or 500 games there over 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean it's my thing, and I'm really gonna miss it.
I'm gonna have to make the pilgrimage. I think I said it before here, but I haven't been to the ballpark in more than 2 decades, and I have to get out this summer or next summer. I'm hoping maybe in June we can put one together. But
that'd be great. Yeah,
gotta go out. Really, I think you can't miss that opportunity to see the ballpark one last time.
You've got a free place to stay.
Hey. We're going to do our first one-room live pod.
Yes.
Tease that for the audience. Tune in as the three of us sit in one room as opposed to three rooms. It's incredible. So definitely things to look at on these Rangers here in 2018. Things to look forward to with, you know, trepidation perhaps, but that's where we're at. You know, appreciate what you got while you still got it. You know, you don't want to be looking back saying, you know, man, I wish I'd seen more. I think it's Tepid who says, no one's ever going to look back and say, I spent too many days at the ballpark, right? No one's ever going to feel that. So go out there, watch Adrian, watch these kids. They're good. One of those kids that you can be watching now and that we will be watching, I think, for years to come. Somebody who's really turning himself into an anchor of the Texas Rangers organization. Delino DeShields. We were a little... I thought we were being a little too jokingly high on him in our preview episode, and then he got hurt in the second game of the season. And it's like, well, okay, we tried. But what? What is this?
He's putting up some pretty insane numbers. And so I did a little calculating, did a little research, a little fun birds, if you will. And there were three graphics coming out of Monday night's game, which he had an amazing game. There was a play where he scored from first to home on basically a grounder to second base that got away from the second baseman.
That was so fun.
It was nuts.
Oh, it was
one of the craziest plays I've seen.
I stood up out of my couch. I mean, that was unbelievable.
It was so crazy. I stood up out of Hayden's couch. I just made right through it.
It teleported.
Yeah.
But also that night, he had a 5-star catch, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then he had the bunt to first base where he slid in and beat the tag, and the graphic from StatCast talked about his speed in each of those three events during the game, and they were a little bit mind-boggling to me. So I kind of wanted to do a little bit of a deep dive into those numbers and tell you what they mean. So the first to home. Of course, we're talking, that's 90 feet, and it's not 90 linear feet. He's actually rounding bases. StatCast said that he was traveling at 30.3 feet per second, which is just mind-boggling. To put it in perspective, just to extrapolate those numbers, for a 40-yard dash going at 30.3 feet per second, that would equate to a 3.96 second 40-yard dash. But then you look at the 5-star catch, and I looked it up, and 5-star catch is defined in StatCast as there being between 0 and 25% probability of a ball being caught. And I believe on this exact ball, it was they said it was 19% was the probability of it being caught. And he was traveling 30.7 feet per second on that run. And that translates to a 3.91 40-yard dash, which is even more amazing. And then you look at the run from home to first, where he beats the tag. That was at 30.9 feet per second. And
That's unbelievable.
That translates to a 3.88 second 40-yard dash. So where does that rank? You know, that's one guy we're talking about here. So this is where I started doing my research. And I'm going to bounce around a little bit here, but StatCast began recording these numbers in 2015. And in 2015, the fastest man in baseball, probably as a surprise to about nobody, was Billy Hamilton. His sprint speed was 30.1 feet per second, and that led the league. So 30.1 for him compared to 30.9 for DDJ on that home to first. And then I looked at, in 2017, Altuve, in September of that year, he had a home to first that was 29.9 feet per second, and that was the fastest since StatCast began keeping records. 29.9 for Altuve, 30.9 for DDJ. And then I went back and looked at history. Okay, who's the greatest base stealer of all time, guys?
Ricky Henderson.
There you go. Do you know what his sprint speed was?
Three.
Any guesses? His was 28.1 feet per second.
No way.
That's a good 2 to 2.5 feet per second slower than what DDJ is doing right in front of our eyes. That
right.
And where is that? How's that being estimated? I'm actually really curious.
So the way that they do it with StatCast, I am pretty sure I have somewhat of a handle on it. I do listen to the StatCast podcast, so if you enjoy listening to podcasts like this one, then go to find the StatCast podcast, because
if you like
guys,
us, go listen to Mike Petriello, because that guy owns. Love you, Mike. Please listen to my podcast.
Please listen. they do a great job of explaining these kind of new stats that they're honestly, and they'll be honest about how they're troubleshooting them and just trying to figure out how to make all these things work. And they're not foolproof numbers, but they explain like the thoughts behind them. Anyways. The sprint speed, I believe, is they catch the fastest 1 second that the player ran.
That's correct. So, I've got the definition here. It says it's...
Yeah, go for it.
It's defined as feet per second in a player's fastest 1 second window on an individual play.
Great. Right. How do they back and retroactively calculate this? How are they looking at a guy like Ricky? Are they going with film and working on it, or...?
I think it's magic.
all math, all the StatCast, that's all sorcery to me, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
When you say that he was 2 feet per second slower, to me that sounds like not a lot at all. You probably have more numbers up in front of you about like the average and the slowest and kind of the range for players. But
28.1 would put you right in line this year, for example, with guys like Abraham Almonte, Aaron Hicks, Didi Gregorius, or Shohei Ohtani. So that's the folks who are clustered around 28.1. Mike, do you have an average sprint speed? What does MLB average look like?
Yeah, StatCast, they define what a poor sprint speed would be, an average, and an elite. So poor sprint speed is 23 feet per second, average is 27, and elite is 30. So you've got DDJ is beyond elite because he's above 30 feet per second, which is still just mind-boggling. And so... first thing I did is I looked at who are the leaders in sprint speed right now in Major League Baseball. DDJ, not surprisingly, is tied for first with Byron Buxton at 30.5 feet per second. And just again to equate that to a 40-yard dash, that would be a 3.94 second 40-yard dash, which is just mind-boggling. And then just behind them is Adam Engel at 30.1, so it's a full 0.4 feet per second slower, which again doesn't sound like much, but
it's enormous.
It is. I mean, when you talk about elite speed, you know,
and the comparative magnitudes here are very small. I mean, you've got only so many guys up here, and the difference between, you know, a perceived speed of, you know, you're looking at a guy who's really fast, you know, Trevor Story, 30 foot flat, he looks fast, or Trey Turner at 29.9, if folks have seen more of Trey Turner, really, really fast. And then you look at a guy who's sitting at 28.5, so Tommy Pham is the Cardinals pop-up, because of course the Cardinals have a magic prospect who's great. Tommy Pham is becoming really good at like 30 years old, and Tommy Pham is at 28.5, and those are both really fast guys, for sure.
Okay, so no peeking, because you've obviously got the list right in front of you.
I'm not looking anymore. I'm not.
Okay.
I swear.
Okay. Who is the slowest man in baseball? And I'll give you a hint.
You know the guy. Hayden, you have to do it instead. I've seen it.
You know Albert this guy. Pujols. This is a common name.
Albert Pujols.
Dang it! I was going to bait him so he would pick Pujols.
Okay. No, I mean that makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
You were going to pick Pujols, weren't you?
Of course.
Yeah.
He's really close.
He's at 22. He's at 22.7. Remember,
22.7.
Poor is 23. He's below poor.
He's below poor.
He's got an F minus.
But he's also extremely rich thanks to Art Moreno.
Yes. And his $30 million. I don't feel real sorry for him. No.
Oh my gosh. I just as a small aside on Albert Pujols. Anytime you're feeling bad as a Rangers fan, go to Schadenfreude. I honestly do this is. I just go to Baseball Reference, go to Albert Pujols' page, scroll down past all of the bold numbers that are all of his excellence, just keep going down to the very bottom, and you just look at what he's making to play for the Angels and what he will continue to make for the next, I think, 3 seasons. And then he has a $10 million like kind of a special advisory role after his contract's up.
Oh, my God. And he's going to be like 48 when that happens, right?
It's like 44, 45, something. I mean,
that's what it says on his birth certificate. But I'm talking about real years.
No tinfoil here.
Yeah. Okay. So back to slowest man in baseball. You give up?
Is it Beltre?
Nope.
Okay.
It is not. There is a Rangers connection. It's gonna give you sports tears.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't like it.
It's Nelson Cruz.
Oh, man.
Right?
So Ron Washington put out the slowest man in baseball to go out and man right field in the 9th inning of Game 6.
It's gross to look at it graphically, too, because Baseball Savant, by the way, is, I assume, Mike, where you're pulling this information from is where I'm looking
at. That is correct.
Yeah, it's a great website for stats folks. They have a lot of really interesting graphical representations. I'm a big nerd, so maybe it's just me, but it's definitely a fun place to go out and spend a couple hours just poking around looking at spray charts and graphs. And when you look at the sprint speed graph, everyone's relatively clustered, and there's outliers, and they're very fun to highlight. Like, oh yeah, Shohei Ohtani is a really fast DH, but we're cheating. He's not really a DH. He's there so he doesn't get hurt. Or you look at first base, and Cody Bellinger is way out there. Nico Goodrum, too, but Cody Bellinger has a really good reputation. He's a first baseman who could probably play center field. That's really cool. And then you look at the DH one, and it's a bunch of slow dudes. And then there's some outliers like, oh, yeah, Edwin Encarnacion, he's very slow. Victor Martinez, he's famously slow. Kendry Morales, he's somehow famously more slow. And then, oh, my goodness gracious, way off, like almost off the chart. Nelson Cruz.
21.3 feet per second. That's 1.7 feet per second slower than poor. So that's an F minus minus.
It's like say a that Z. Number one more time. Yeah. What's his feet per second?
21.3.
So he is a full 9 feet per second behind Delino.
Yeah.
So and
change.
Wouldn't you love to watch that foot race? It's like what's that guy that was doing the sprints in the
freeze
on the warning track? Yeah, it would be like the freeze. That's exactly what it would be like. Just DDJ would give Cruz, you know, okay, here's a 40-yard head start, and then he would still catch up to him.
Let him run to center field straight away. Center. He could start running and beat him to the right field pole.
It's awesome.
Where would Nelson Cruz on the base paths have to start in order to beat Delino going from first to home?
Okay, so.
Or where does he start for Delino to still tie him or beat him to home?
Right.
Like, how far up?
Delino made it in 8.91 seconds. Nelson Cruz made it in 12.68 seconds. So
you're talking 4 seconds.
4 seconds. Yeah.
Which would equate to 36 feet.
80 feet or so, right?
Oh, I mean, Nelson would just be rounding second as Delino is sliding into home. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Sweet. Yeah.
Hey, so I'll say this.
Fun
I'll say this,
with
though.
Numbers.
And this is not a numerical component. This is just a lizard brain baseball component. Is what I love about speed and what makes me initially like Delino and hope for the best for him is speed is one of those skills that never has a day off.
Yeah.
You're going to...
It's always there.
You're going to hit, you know, watch Joey Gallo. He's an insane power hitter, probably the best, one of the best we'll ever see, and yet he will go a week without hitting a home run. But speed shows up to play every day, and it's really exciting to... You never know when the next ground ball to the second baseman is going to have him score. It's
that
unbelievable.
Was such a fun play.
It's such an elite and such a present skill that will affect not only the game when, you know, the ball is rolling around on the field, but also, you know, just when he's on first base and the pitcher and the catcher and the defense is having to play and account for his speed.
As a testament to your comment that speed never takes a day off. Over the last two seasons, the Rangers are 41-19 when Delino DeShields scores a run. Just let that sink in on how bad these teams have been. And they're 41-19, 22 games over 500 when he scores just one run. And, you know, I'm grasping at straws going, okay, what is happening right in front of us? And there are a couple things that I discovered. The first one, it was just a comment that I saw online on where the speed is coming from, and I think this was a Dallas Morning News article. It said Delino DeShields said he spent time over the winter working on explosiveness, just getting out of the blocks, you know, coming off of first base or coming out of the batter's box. He did that. That was for the first time in his career he focused on explosiveness, and that's what we're seeing. And I think that's just fascinating for a guy like that to say, how can I improve one small part of my game to make me just a little bit better? But the other thing that I found really interesting, and it was really timely, if you guys out there, if you are a subscriber to The Athletic, I would highly recommend...
Which you should be.
Yes. I would highly recommend reading today's article written by Jamie Newberg, where basically, in his mind, he's kind of compared Delino DeShields to Hank Blaylock. And Hank Blaylock was a guy coming out of the minors, number one hitter in the minors. He was, there's so much fanfare when he first came up through the organization that he was just going to do such amazing things. And what happened was he fell in love with the home run. And Jamie did this correlation between Hank Blaylock and Delino DeShields to show they had very similar arcs for quite a while, where they would hit a home run and then all of their numbers would just take a dive. And sometimes it was 50, 60, maybe 70 at bats where they're trying to replicate that. Their batting average is down. Their on-base percentage is down. Their slugging is down. So, I mean, it's just really dragging them down as they're trying to do the same thing over and over. And it's getting away from what their core strengths were. And what's different with Hank, with Delino DeShields is that while he did that in prior years, it's not happening this year. He hit a home run at the very beginning of May, and then he maintained all of his stats across the board. In fact, then he hit another home run, and he maintained. And so he's not reaching. He's not trying to be something he's not. You know, maybe every once in a while, he sees a pitcher groove one, you know, right over the middle of the plate, and yeah, he's going to take a swing at that. But he's not looking for that. He's just letting the game come to him and do the things that make him great.
And there's something that really stands out to me about DeShields that that you're talking about here that we're hinting at that reminds me of more of an academic concept, which is comparative advantages. So there is a philosophy that says if you're good at something, I think where a lot of people would naturally say, improve what you're weak at. And that's a really important thing to do for most people every day. You know, I look at the stuff that I'm good at and look at the stuff that I'm bad at and say, let me fix what I'm bad at and bring that up to at least sort of an average or a playable level. But in a game like baseball, in a sort of a zero-sum game where there are outcomes and there are winners and there are losers, there's a really interesting strategy and philosophy that you should pursue in which you take what you're good at and you become incredible at it. You know, if I'm a big, strong guy, should I work on my raw straight-line speed? That's probably a nice thing to have overall, but if I'm playing football, no, I want to be bigger and stronger than you. That's what I'm good at. And what DeShields has done this year, differently from what he's done in past years, and what you're talking about here and what Newberg is talking about, and I will confess that I have been delinquent on my homework today. I wasn't able to read anything, but it sounds like DeShields this season has focused in on saying, I'm really fast, let's maximize that speed. Let's make sure that my center field defense is as good as it can be based off of my speed. Let's show that I'm getting onto base, that I am screwing with pitchers, that I am doing incredible things based off of my speed. I'm going to try and take that speed up. If I'm a 29.5 foot a second guy, that's really good. But I can be better than that. And if I'm a 30 and a half foot a second guy, I am insanely good. And that is really interesting. And we talked about how much we like rooting for Delino in our last pod. And I think this is something that comes through again, that he sounds like a guy, and the broadcast has been talking about this a lot too, so I know I'm all over the place here, but I have a point. The broadcast keeps focusing on him in the dugout, taking his notes on pitchers. And that is fascinating to me. And I know it has really, really intrigued Tag, and I think CJ has talked about it a lot as well. Just watching Delino take his notes and write everything down, he's a very cerebral player. And he's somebody who really approaches the game in a very interesting way, a very academic way. And he said, how do I get better? I'll just get even faster. I'm really fast, and I can get even faster. And that advantage is going to set me apart from adding 4 home runs to my total stat line. Yeah, I could bulk up. I might be able to hit 9 home runs this year. But he's going to have a better advantage by just getting faster. And that is, we're seeing the results. We're seeing them every day. And it is really fun, and it's very cool, and I am a big fan of it.
Yeah, even when he had the failed first to third on the bunt, was that yesterday? You know, even though he wasn't successful, the fact that he's trying that is just insane and unheard of. And he's at elite level and beyond elite. He's just,
yeah.
His speed is something you guys out there that are listening, you should really pay attention to just what he's doing out there on the field, because he's laying it all out on the line every single day.
There's a return on investments problem that comes up in base running and a number of other sort of academic disciplines, but in baseball it's really big on in base running, where if you are incredibly successful all the time, you know, if you have a 95, let's just pull numbers out, if you have a 95% stolen base rate or extra base taking rate, that's really good. You know, you can't argue with that. It probably means, though, that you are leaving opportunities on the table by picking and choosing your spots and being great every time you go. You are leaving a number of opportunities that you would have also been safe on the table in the interest of avoiding those few opportunities where you would have been off. So maybe your target's you more like 80 to 85%, but because you run more often, the bulk successes outweigh those few extra points of loss. And that's what I love about Delino being more aggressive. I like that he's emphasized that speed and that he is willing to go out there and push you. If players know that DeShields might try and go first to home on a ground ball to a first baseman that leaks into right field, they're going to be very careful. That's going to open up opportunities for the hitters. That's going to change the way that people defend folks like, say, Joey Gallo. That's really big. That's what we've seen with Billy Hamilton to some extent. I got to see him in person in a game score from second on a routine grounder to the first baseman. Same way. He just runs, and that changes the game. It opens it up. It's really fun to watch. It's exciting baseball, and I'm a big fan of watching Delino do it. So we've talked a lot about Delino DeShield today. We've talked a bunch about Nomar Mazara. We have a third young player, another sort of maybe questionable these days foundation stone of the organization who should be coming back to us very soon, and that is Rougned Odor. He is rehabbing. I believe he is with Round Rock as we speak. Should be coming off the disabled list probably this weekend, potentially in the Houston series, if not then early next week. And it remains to be seen what we're going to get. We had a very promising week to 10 days of Rougned right before he got hurt. So it remains to be seen which version of Rougned we're going to get when play resumes. And I think the most interesting question about him, though, is what happens to the roster when he comes up? And that question apparently got a lot more interesting today because, Mike, you were saying that Jeff Manister had something to say about Rougned's place on the team?
Yeah, Jeff Kavanaugh tweeted today, a quote from Benny. He said, "You've got to put numbers on the board. It's a meritorious business." And Kavanaugh went on to say that Benny said Rougie will be at second base when he's back, but there's competition there. So, you know, did he get Wally pipped? Do we have a chance for Profar? to come in and do a job, do his job, or will IKF get some time there? It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
That is really interesting, because you look at the way that the roster projects with the middle infield, and Elvis is still going to be out for at least another month, and so you would assume that Profar is going to play shortstop still. I mean, there's no reason to move him off of that right now. So I think what we're talking about is, at least for the immediate future, is going to be an IKF versus Odor kind of situation. And
that's astonishing to think about.
Yeah, that's...
Or it could mean that they're just watching Profar at the plate versus Odor at the plate over the next 30 days. That's
sure. That might be it too.
Even that.
And it gets, because Profar, his natural position is second base. So Elvis comes in, they can slide him in, and that's where he's going to shine. I mean, we've seen him have some rough plays at shortstop, but that's not his natural position. So it could just be a 30-day audition.
That is one way to think about it, is that they'll be fighting for the same job at the same time, I guess, which is good, because you know one of the bad things, and we saw this last year with the comically named three-headed monster in left field with Profar, Rua, and somebody that was not memorable enough, and
Napoli.
No, I don't remember. But
yeah, I guess it was the year before that Napoli played some left field.
Yeah. But the point is that when you do have somewhat of a, well, let's see which player is better kind of situation, you can only usually play one of those players at a time. And so you are limiting your exposure and your sample size and all that kind of stuff. So that is something to consider, that they're going to be playing side by side for the second base job that starts, you know, mid-June.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see who we move around on the roster to accommodate Rougned coming off as well. I mean, the playing time thing is going to be big, especially before Elvis comes back in June, as we've just discussed. But who goes down right now is also interesting. Ryan Rua is definitely an attractive option there. That may leave our center field situation in a bit of a state. But Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is an option.
So what happened with Drew? Drew Robinson, he... got an injection in his hip, and he's being put on the... So, but they haven't announced anyone coming up in his place, so maybe that's the natural person going sideways on the DL instead of going down, and they slide Odor into his place. I don't know.
Yeah, Robinson could come back up and replace a couple of folks off the roster, but... I mean, I think when Robinson went down, the immediate roster move was to take Eliezer Alvarez and put him on, but he went down when Beltre came up. And Alvarez is somebody who does make some sense. The team has tried him out in center, I believe, and he's played some outfield. He's also a middle infielder. He's not an especially great defender at any position that I'm aware of. Certainly not, at least at shortstop or center field. He's not a plus defender at either position, but he's somebody who could man those. So he's an option to come back up, but the bat is absolutely not there, and he would really be just here for a glove, and I don't think we really want to do that. We do have to be careful. At some point, Carlos Tochi is going to bat his way back onto this team. He's going to force his way onto the 25-man roster. No, that's not true. We also have to look at Kiner-Falefa going down, which leaves us in an interesting state when it comes to middle infield depth. Renato Nunez cannot be optioned. He would have to be DFA'd. I think the team believes in him a little bit more than that. They may try and phantom DL him or hope and pray that he has a minor injury. Ronald Guzman is the one who makes, I think, the most sense to me all around, in that he only plays first base, and we can just move Joey back over there to the position that we think he fits in best long-term for this organization. But then we're losing Guzman's bat in the interest of keeping Ryan Rua on the team. So I don't... I'm interested in seeing what they do, because I think whatever move they make will send a very clear message about a specific player. If Nunez is DFA, they say, maybe you hit in AAA. You know, if Ryan Rua is sent down, it's, we believe in Ronald Guzman. If Guzman is sent down, it's, we believe in him, we want to have him work in AAA, we're still willing to give Ryan Rua a chance. You know, if Isaiah goes down, they're saying, we think this guy is more than a bench player. I mean, you don't want to waste young players in bench spots, but someone has to be the middle infielder backup. And if they're willing to send him down, that means they're saying, we want this guy batting every day because we think he is an important part of this team. He's not simply a bench guy forever. He's not just going to be a backup player his entire career. So that's, there's interesting things. You can frame it however you want. There's going to be something interesting that comes out with the roster when Rugi comes back up.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure this is going to happen tomorrow, like, or maybe even tonight, and all of this speculation will be... You know,
yeah, by the time you're listening to this, we may sound like complete morons. Please forgive us for our trespasses.
Yeah, what so. I think that you are right about whatever happens is going to be very telling about what the organization thinks of a number of players. Mm-hmm. Probably. I guess
maybe,
there's like 1.5 moves that would kind of be uninteresting, but my personal guess is Guzman goes down, and then shortly after,
Nunez down for Calhoun, maybe, or Nunez.
I think Nunez gets DFA'd or Phantom DL'd, and then Calhoun comes up, and then you know we just buckle in. But
we'll see what happens. I'm gonna put mine out there. Then I think we're gonna send Guzman down, and then when Calhoun is ready, we're gonna keep Nunez and very squishily platoon him wherever it makes sense. Maybe given Beltre some off days and letting Nunez feast on lefties, and then seeing how that goes. So, Mike, do you have a prediction?
Yeah, I have a mad scientist prediction.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this whole Gallo not playing any third base while Beltre's been out and how it's just puzzling to me.
Yeah.
And I've decided it's that the coaching staff, they told Beltre, no, we're not preparing for your exit. You're going to be here. Gallo, we're going to keep it first. You don't have to worry about anything. You're going to be here forever. And then they'll trade Beltre on July 31st, and Gallo will slide over to the third, and then they'll bring up Guzman back at first base, and then they'll go with their plan.
I mean, it wouldn't be that shocking. It would be, in some ways, a lot very validating to see Joey every day at third base.
I mean, what if that was their thinking all along? They just didn't want to disrespect Beltre by saying, here's your eventual replacement filling in for you while you're on the DL. Just a thought.
I kind of wish that as a fan, we had a better understanding of the kind of conversations that take place between front offices and coaching staffs and players. Because like I don't know how I would talk to Adrian Beltre as Jeff Bannister or as John Daniels or... Yeah, goodness gracious, as a quote-unquote lesser coach or front office member, like you're talking to a Hall of Famer. You're talking to one of the, you know, the titans of the game here. How do you try and navigate that? You know, can you play it straight with these guys? Do you have to beat around the bush? Do you have to be afraid of sensibilities? I wish that we had a better understanding of those kinds of conversations. It's something I've really appreciated in Levi Weaver's writing, is that I think he understands these people as people a little bit better than a lot of sports writers tend to put into their articles. That's a bit of a fun taste, but there's just so much that the three of us, for example, do not know at all about how these dynamics work that would change fundamentally, I think, the way we talk about baseball teams making personnel decisions. And it's just like a big unknown that really intrigues me.
It's funny you say that, because all the talk on, at least on the ticket, I'm sure it's for all sports radio in Dallas recently, has been the Amazon Prime documentary that they just dropped recently that followed the Cowboys through their 2017 season. Have you guys heard anything about this at all?
A little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's dominated talk radio here. And the thing that has been great about it is seeing those conversations between coaches, not just the head coach, but the running back coach and, you know, the defensive coordinator, and talking to specific players and hearing it on the radio just over and over in my head. I keep playing the thought, why can't they do this in baseball? I mean, I understand you wouldn't want to follow a team for 162 games, but why couldn't they do something like that? Baseball, they get in their own way so many times. They just don't know how to market themselves. I would love to see that, so I could see them pulling back the curtain to see what kind of conversations happen between coaches and players.
Yeah, that would be great. Like a Hard Knocks style thing, mm-hmm. where you just follow the Baltimore Orioles and What did Buck Showalter say to Adam Jones and Manny Machado? I would pay good money just to see that.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. That's a great idea.
You know what I would not pay good money to see?
I think I know what you're going to say.
Our
live podcast?
Oh, hey, come on. Hey. Come on. We're worth it. No, Hayden, you know where I'm going with this.
There will be some baseball games played this weekend in the greater Houston area.
And have already paid money to see these because I have MLB TV.
Yeah.
And I'm tempted to email them and say, look, let's be honest. This isn't fair. Yeah, so let's just say our preview is don't.
Pain. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Stop. Just treat yourself.
Yeah.
Do you have an actual preview you want to run through really quick, Hayden?
I do think that Sunday could be an all-time slashing. Just slot fest.
Moore, Dallas Keuchel, your favorite left-handed pitchers.
Woo. My recommendation would be to go see The Avengers that day.
Yes. Go. Rewatch it if you need to. I might. Why not? No. So the baseball this weekend may not be good, but the baseball discussion this weekend, I think it is going to be very good. So thank you, loyal listeners, who have slogged all the way to end of this, the tail end of an hour's worth of episode 13 of the Rangers Rundown. You, dear loyal listener, you will now know. This weekend, we will be joined by one of Baseball Prospectus' own. Yes, we have a real, live, living and breathing baseball writer coming in to talk to you about the minor leagues. You can find him on Baseball Prospectus, Mr. Kevin Carter. Pull him up on Twitter. He will be joining us to talk about the minor leagues, the focus on the Rangers players in the upper minors, some big names in the lower minors. He may be teasing for us a few of his pieces over at BP. Should be really, really good content. Please tune in for that. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Tell people you don't even like very much. That's fine, too. We'll listen to them. We'll take them in. Kevin Carter should be joining us. I'm excited. I know Mike and Hayden are excited.
Yeah. He is a smart baseball
man. Very excited.
And especially when it comes to guys that we don't get to watch a lot with our eyeballs. He's consistently out at Frisco and is connected with scouts and other team officials. So it's going to be really good to get first-hand accounts and or very close second-hand accounts of a lot of players that we only see the stat lines for. I'm really looking forward to it.
Tune in for that. We've talked about it. We've teased about having some minor-centric episodes. Sunday should be very much such an episode. We've got a big old list of names of guys we would like to ask questions about. We're going to get some scouting reports. We're going to get some thumbs-ups, some thumbs-down. We're going to see what we get. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be very fun. You can find Kevin on Twitter. We'll be sure to share his handles over the next couple of days. You can find us, of course, at Rangers Rundown on Twitter. All of our individual handles are in there. We will have all sorts of lovely internet content for you. So instead of watching the Rangers play the Astros, go talk to your family, see your kids, see your wives, see your husbands, see your parents. I don't care. See somebody. Have some fun. Go to a bar. Don't go to a bar. Do whatever. I'm not your dad. Do your thing. Go out there and then tune in Monday morning, bright and early, and pick up some lovely Rangers prospect talk. That's it. That's the Rangers Rundown. Go out there. Go Rangers next week or whatever. Have fun.
Talk to you soon.
Yep. We love you all.